Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a vodcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from thousands of successful individuals from around the world. I am your host, Ashutosh Garg, and today I'm delighted and privileged to welcome a person from the world of art from Singapore, Christina Chua. Christina, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Ashutosh.
Christina is the founder of SoFar. She's also the director of education and consultancy of Metis Art. So, Christina, let's start talking about Metis. Tell me a little bit about this venture.
Well, Metis Art is a traditional art consultancy and education group that operates in the world of fine art. I personally consult with collectors, both young and old, new and experienced, on how to begin, start, or develop and grow an art collection. And we do this through a number of different methods, but primarily through educational courses that are both foundational as well as advanced and topical. So either I myself or other curators and specialists in their fields teach and lecture on different topics that would be relevant to art collectors everywhere. Those course fees, actually 50% of them are donated to respective arts nonprofits. So we immediately inculcate like a habit of giving back and a notion of art patronage that is beyond just the accumulation of objects and paintings for a home. And we start to develop and foster patronage and collecting in this manner, in an educational manner.
Fascinating. And before I go any further, what got you interested in the subject of art? And, you know, because you obviously invested a lot of time in this very interesting topic.
Well, I grew up with art around. I recall my sister actually taking me to art museums, and she as well also studied art. So I would watch her paint and draw. Eventually, I also followed in her footsteps to take the same art program as she did. I became very good friends and acquainted with my art teachers. And so I owe a lot of my career to my art teachers. So art education is very close to my heart, and it's why I chose to bring it to the center of my own business model. Because I feel that that drive to learn more about difference and otherness is perhaps it's a stronger motivation than even to make money. Some investors come to the art world and they ask myself or other art advisors and consultants, how can I make money through investing in art? It's fine as a beginning question, but there's such a deeper journey into the world of art and into what artists can teach us about ourselves, our lives, and the lives of others, the histories of others, that is far more interesting.
I agree with you. And that gives me the segue to my next question. What should motivate an art collector to buy? The fact that the piece of art appeals to them, or its potential future value?
Well, I feel that both of those things can motivate. But it's also about like an order or priority or hierarchy of motivations, right? Of course, the art world is to a layer filled with collectors who are collecting for financial motivations, where there is a segment of the art world, I think, that's been somewhat glorified in the media, or where collectors, say, purchase artworks at auction that go directly into Freeport storage and they don't even see the work. It doesn't even hang on their wall. They don't even enjoy it, as it were. But I say that that is really, really a slim percentage of the art world,
I
you
agree.
know.
I agree.
I think that most of us ordinary, say even retail investors, people who have maybe $5,000, $10,000 at our disposal and want to get into collecting, that motivation can begin with a love for the art, and one that is intellectual, one that is visual, and aesthetic, and that appeal can appeal to your mind, like what's an interesting concept that the art is putting forward, as well as visual and aesthetic. Does it even, you know, appeal to my senses, right? And that's, I think, it's for everybody, right?
No, that's a great response. Great response. But my next question to you, Krishna, is what drives the value of art?
Oh, that's a heavy question that would require you to come for my courses, my foundational courses.
Maybe I will.
actually, a statement that we, like, it's a keystone statement that I return to in the foundational course, which I call the Tetrad, because it's a four-part course, is that history drives the value of art. History determines the value of art. And that means that art history, which is extremely subjective and written and penned by art historians, curators, in a sense, gatekeepers, to art institutions, museums, everywhere, they are the ones who are making and writing this history. Now there's that like sense of unspoken consensus between, you know, I would say art museums around the world, institutions and curators. And some of that unspoken consensus is somehow determined by a certain cultural zeitgeist. For example, right now we're in a cultural moment where the global South, that means any country below the equator, many of those countries are post-colonial countries, you know, they're asserting, I would say, their own art histories amongst the canon of the West right now. And that's a cultural zeitgeist that can also be seen in pop culture and in different spheres, not just the visual arts. And that you see is, you know, it's happening in major exhibitions all around the world. I just had the privilege of visiting Castle Documenta. It was a very important exhibition for me to see because I collect Indonesian art, and it was curated by an Indonesian art collective called Rong Rupa from Jakarta. This was like the first time this world-class exhibition that happens only 5 years, every 5 years, it was curated by an art collective, you know, from the global South. And so that is, I believe that those cultural moments, that zeitgeist definitely affects the way history and art history is driving the value of art.
Very interesting. And, you know, I've seen a lot of art with collectors in the Western part of the world. They've started to recently, in the last 7, 8 years, suddenly started to discover art from Southeast Asia, China, India. I'd love to get your perspective on how art from, if I can use the term, our part of the world is being accepted globally.
Absolutely. You know, that totally has to do with what I said to your question on the value of art.
Yeah.
Asia is asserting itself culturally in a very momentous way.
Yeah.
I would use, say, an example of, say, South Korea, the Korean Peninsula, and how I would say, like, Korean culture, not just in K-dramas or K-pop or even K-beauty, but even like Korean art is being accepted amongst, say, Western collectors.
Correct, correct.
And how this has come to be is that the local collectors in Korea have for decades quietly and in a very, very dedicated manner built both private and corporate and public collections of Korean art and artifacts. And they have really prized their own local treasures, alongside international and Western art. So if you go over to Korea, you'll see some of the finest art collections in the world where you'll have Korean artifacts sitting alongside, international artworks. And I feel that really creates a dialogue between Korea and the West, where Korean modern art, or dansaekwa as it's called, has been ushered into the global discourse of, I would say, like Western modernism and minimalism, because curators are able to see those works side by side. And when that happens, then international collectors start to get interested in Asia because they see the bridges being built, they see the resonances in those historical East to West. Does that make sense?
Yeah, makes a lot of sense. But the other thing that I have often heard people talk about is that as the value of art is going up, there are a lot of copies being made. How do people figure out what to buy? I mean, the original is obviously very expensive.
Well, I would say yes. You do have to be aware of fakes and copies at any level.
Correct.
Like not just Picasso's. I mean, even I'm in Singapore, and there are some even, say, Singapore modern masters who are painting on rice paper and calligraphy, where you can find fakes, for under a price bracket, say
Correct.
50 to 100,000.
Correct.
So that's where provenance comes in hand, and that's something that we as an art consultancy can definitely advise on provenance and authenticity. And there are specialists around the world who would be able to advise on a specific genre, or even down to the specific artist, right? And they'd be able to vet the piece and see whether it would be fake or real. You definitely want to look at like exhibition history as well as who owned the piece, before, what was the trail that led that artwork to you. It's oftentimes very good to know who are the galleries who dealt in the piece before it reached you, because those galleries, due to their reputation in the art ecosystem and the market, also lend a certain measure of provenance to the work.
Fascinating, fascinating. Moving now gears to your other organization so far. I remember I bought my first piece of art when I was 22 years old, and I've been collecting ever since. I wanted to ask you, how does a young person today who's assuming they are interested in art or collecting art, how do they start to get some kind of ownership of so much art that's available?
Absolutely. That's a really great question. a lot of millennials, and you know, there's data that definitely backs this up. A lot of millennials now purchase art online. And they purchase art directly via Instagram through creators and artists that they just discover. They might slide into their DMs and ask them, oh, you have these prints available. And I think that that really, that that culture of like online purchasing led us to NFTs, you know, and it's interesting because you have a generation also very much accustomed to remote work and remote living, a generation that may not necessarily have it in their bucket list to buy and acquire their dream home,
correct,
you know, a digital nomadic generation. And the notion of collecting, acquiring objects and filling a home with designer objects or art objects might not be a priority for this new generation.
Correct.
But instead, with NFTs, you can have, you know, everything on your device, you know, and there might be different ways of flexing that are like showing off one's collection that are more in tune with one's digital identity, even avatar. And so NFTs have really, I think, captured the imagination of this younger, more online and immersed digitally generation.
And I'm trying to understand, if there is, say, a piece of work, an art that has been made into NFTs, if I can use that term, and there are, you know, 10,000 people who have all owned a small piece of it, how does ownership of that piece of art get established in anyone's name? Or is it just like a little share that is makes me feel good that I've got a small piece of a Michelangelo or something of that kind?
Oh, so you're talking about fractionalized ownership of art on the blockchain.
The NFTs, I'm saying. Unless I've misunderstood the meaning of NFT. Maybe you can explain it, how NFTs works for art.
So there are different ways. I think that the method that you're talking about is fractionalized ownership of art on the blockchain.
Okay.
There are a few companies that are doing this where they acquire or at least hope to acquire a blue chip artwork, you know, in the millions. And then they mint tokens that represent fractional ownership of such an artwork. Now, this can be done on or off the blockchain.
Okay.
A company that preceded, say, the, I would say, preceded NFTs and does this without the blockchain is a company called Masterworks, which is the art world's only unicorn. It's a very large unicorn. And it's called Masterworks. But there are others as well that also use the blockchain.
Okay.
But NFTs are not tied to this utility alone. You know, the use cases of NFTs are so many. You know, one of the strongest use cases of NFTs is to really go back to your question about provenance and authenticity. And it probably will take a few years for the entire art world to embrace NFTs to trace the provenance of artworks as they move throughout the art world and from different hands and different owners. Because right now, if I say purchase this painting behind me from a gallery, they actually FedEx over a certificate of authenticity that's paper, you know? So if I lose that piece of paper, or if my house burns down and, you know, like that shelf gets destroyed and I it's lost, I have to either request another certificate of authenticity from the gallery, or I don't get it at all, and I can't actually verify that this artwork is by Saiful Garibaldi. Now that's a problem that NFTs can solve, because once you issue an NFT that could be a proof of authenticity, it's completely mutable and unchangeable. It's written into the blockchain forever.
Okay.
So, I mean, there are many use cases for
I
NFTs. Another one is also to allow for royalties to be distributed ad infinitum, potentially, as well as according to certain splits that may be pre-agreed and then written into the smart contracts. Now, on the primary market, of course, artists do get a percentage of sales, say between 40 to 60% of a sale. So for example, for this painting, the artist probably made 50% on the sale that the gallery sold it for. But on secondary market, if I put this painting up for auction, no percentage of that auction result will go back to Saiful Garibaldi.
Wow.
And that's a problem, you know. And that's a problem that NFTs do solve.
Very interesting. Okay, so I've got time for one more question. And this is for the many, many people who will listen to our conversation. Based on your vast experience in the world of art and all the work that you are doing, what would you say are a few lessons that you think our viewers and listeners can take away from your learnings?
Well, I believe that art is always about others. You know, art is just a wonderful method of learning about other people.
Yeah,
it's a wonderful way to enhance and develop empathy for other stories, other histories, and other ways of life. So if you are, you know, a collector with some disposable income, I don't think it's a useful place to start to ask, how can I start collecting to grow this amount of money?
Yeah.
You know, actually, the better way to enhance your life, right, to enhance your well-being, is to ask yourself, like, how can I dedicate this money to learning about others,
correct,
you know, through art? I think that that's much more enriching, and that will take you into a place that is really beyond profit. It's really about enriching your soul, and experiencing something that you wouldn't experience in any other field, perhaps. You're able to bring something, of course, of beauty back into your home that you can live with, but you're also able to hopefully learn about another culture, another person's history, another story.
Fascinating, fascinating. Krishina, on that note, thank you so much for speaking to me. You know, as you've been speaking, I was reminded of my own journey in the world of art. And people have often asked me, how did you collect so much? And I said, it's been 44 years since I started working that I've been collecting one or two pieces every year. And it's become a very large collection today. Thank you so much for sharing your amazing thoughts. You know, the comments that that resonate well with me is, history determines the value of art. I never thought of it like that, but thank you for pointing that to me. And your second thought, among so many others, was, art is all about others. Thank you for speaking to me, Krishina, and good luck
to
you.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.